Cinema Cemetery, where bad films go to die. I am your host, DJ Spectre, coming to you undead only on Penguin Radio. Tonight's feature, which we will be resurrecting and dissecting, is one of my personal favorites, and since Halloween's coming up, I figured I'd do something a little special. It features multicolored gore, Kandarian demons, and vaudevillian slapstick. But before we get into any of that, allow me to introduce tonight's guests. Multiple people who I'm summoning from the void. Mara and Tomas, how are you?
Very well.
Good, thanks.
So, today we watched Evil Dead 2, and I did something a little different since it is Halloween. I wanted to do something special, and so this is a film that I really like a lot, but you guys haven't seen, and I wanted to share it with you guys.
To be fair, I've seen parts of it, because I've walked in on you watching it before, and I've always been like, and then turn around and left.
I don't know about this one.
No, not this. Maybe not this one.
Yeah, that's been Army of Darkness.
I've seen behind the scenes of this one. So there's that.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, so, I guess talk, because I usually talk to my guests about their background with the film, but now, this is my choice, so I get to talk about me. So I found out about Evil Dead 2 in high school, and I thought it sounded fun, I thought it sounded cool, I really wanted to seek it out. I was looking everywhere for it, and I couldn't find it, but then finally, when I was in college, I saw it in the library along with the first one. And not the third one, but I'd already seen the third one. And I was just like, hold up. So then I rented it immediately. And even though I saw it, I think 5 years after I found out about it, it did not disappoint me. So what did you guys think?
It was something.
I mean, I told you in advance, you wanted us to initially watch it and record immediately after. Mm-hmm. And I told you I thought I needed 24 hours to process my thoughts. And I think I may need 48 hours to process my thoughts on this, because it was a thing, and it was a lot of a thing. Not as much of a thing as I've seen, like, as you've made me watch before, but, you know, it was enjoyable, though. For, like, a Halloween-y movie, it was enjoyable.
Yeah, and that's kind of the point of it. And speaking of how enjoyable it is, let's talk about the plot, because there really is none. It's very, very thin.
It was, you know how, like, in The Hobbit, they had, like, the first movie for plot, the second movie for just a giant action scene? Mm-hmm. I kind of got that vibe from this, where it's, like, first movie may have had... Oh.
It didn't.
Oh, never mind.
It was about the same.
But, I mean, it was a giant action scene, and it was a fun action scene, you know?
I almost felt like the plot was built around that one shot where he's, like, looking down on the old lady with the shotgun and he like shoots her. I felt like they wrote that first and they're like, oh, this would be so cool. Let's make a movie around this.
Yeah, so just very simple. This guy and his girlfriend go to a cabin in the woods. The cabin has this recording and this very old book called the Necronomicon.
They're just chilling on the desk, by the way. Like, there's nothing like protecting them. They're literally just on the desk.
Well, I think in this movie and in the musical, it's hinted at.
Of course there's a musical adaptation.
It's a musical, it's a TV show, it's an experience, it's a generation.
Of course
they kind of say that they're kind of just like breaking into this cabin, essentially. Like, they're pretty sure it's empty, they're just kind of like intruding. But
I did like the comment that Ash made. Like, his girlfriend's like, what if they come back? He's like, we'll just say we're lost. And I was like...
With your car,
as they're sipping champagne.
I know, out of their house, like, these people's champagne in their clothes, in their bed. I'm like, yeah, that's plausible.
But yes, they listen to the recording, they read the book, it unleashes demons. Demons run amok. The daughter of the man who owns the cabin comes back with more pages of the Necronomicon. And she's just going to put them in the collection. She finds Jake and Baba Joe. Who...
God bless Bobby Joe.
I love... we'll talk about Annie, Bobby Joe, and Jake. But I love them dearly. And Jake takes them to the cabin. And they find Ash. and they don't like him because they're all like, "Oh, you killed her parents." But then,
I mean, he is covered in blood with a bloody chainsaw near him, so it's not
the most improbable.
Yeah, it's not an obscene conclusion for them to come to. They were far off.
A couple of unlikely friends.
Yeah, you know. Shoot, there was something else I was gonna say that I liked about, like, the abandoned house. Oh, the daughter. The professor's Annie. Daughter, when she comes back, how she's just like,
"This is my father."
She gets off the plane and her boyfriend goes, "Oh, what'd you find? Do you think it'll come to any conclusions?" And she's like, "Oh yes, I've just come back from excavation. I've got these pages from the Book of the Dead." And when he goes, "Do you think it'll, like, lead to any conclusion?" She goes, "Nah." And I was like, why'd you go on all this, like, big expedition if you didn't think it was gonna, like, lead to anything?
Well, this was a fun fact I was going to add later, but since you bring it up now, we will be kind of talking about the similarities between this and the 60s The Haunting movie. The line that Annie says there is actually directly lifted from The Haunting. She says, "It could be nothing, or maybe the gateway to another world," which is what the doctor in The Haunting says when he's trying to get the old woman to let him
It's a little stay at more fitting in The Haunting, though. And let me just say, I love the movie The Haunting, mm-hmm. the old movie. It's not the Netflix one, but...
Or the, I think it was 90s or 2000s one. There was a remake.
But no, the original one is like, it's just a good spooky time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's enjoyable, which is why I was asked to be on this episode. But
yes, because she's actually seen the original The Haunting.
And read the book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this has any similarities with the book.
None. Didn't pick up on any.
They're very subtle. And you see, it's thematic. But yes, yes, anarchy happens, and a bunch of... basically at the end it becomes reading the passages from the book to summon the evil and then killing the evil that way. But, uh-oh, SpaghettiOs, Ash gets sent to the Middle Ages.
Spoilers.
You saw it.
Yeah, but your listeners haven't.
Oh, I get... Well, spoilers.
It's gonna come up later.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I guess kind of spoilers. I don't know if you guys picked up on this, but when they're talking about the person who was supposed to have killed the evil in the first place, and Ash is like, "Well, he did a pretty bad job of it." It's Ash. And that's why he's sent back in time to kill the evil. Mm-hmm. And that's what the third movie is all about.
I didn't pick up on that.
Watch our movie. It's one of those movies you have to watch multiple times to get those subtle mm-hmm. details.
100% yes.
And that's pretty much the plot. The plot is a very thin kind of framework to fit all these really wacky...
Despite thin framework, though, like I said, it was an enjoyable watch.
Yeah, because the real emphasis and the real sort of joy of the movies comes from the really creative horror that the writers and producers were able to think about or were able to create. And I think that's kind of one of my favorite parts of the franchise is it's not just, you know.
And I was telling Tomas while we were watching it, too, that I'd watched a behind-the-scenes with you before I ever saw one of the movies, and I do remember them saying something along those lines, that basically they, like, told the special effects people, like, "We have no budget, make something happen," and that's what they turned out. And so you can tell that they did have a lot of fun with it and kind of, like, shoved it all in one place.
Yeah, and on our next... part of Cinema Cemetery, we'll be talking about some of our least favorite and favorite aspects of the movie when we return on Cinema Cemetery. And we're back! So let's talk about some of the different elements of the movies, the negatives, the positives. In your guys' opinion, what was the worst element?
For me,
oh,
it kind of has to do with plot, because So they're like, oh my god, we need to read these pages to break the curse. And then immediately out of nowhere, Hillbilly, whatever his name is, comes through and throws the papers down to where the grandma is. Dying. I'm like, bruh.
Jake was emotional. Bobby Joe was in the woods.
I was dying, though. He tries to throw it down the trap like, door, missed. And he tosses it, misses, and the pages get wedged. So he has to kind of, like, flick them so they fall down into this trap door.
I was like, they were literally like, how can we make this movie longer?
We need some tension, people.
Baba Joe was in the woods.
But so still, it was a pretty quick conclusion to reach. Plus, he doesn't really have any, like, leverage against them at that point, because it's not like he's, like, holding them and he's like, only give them to you if you help me find Bobby Joe. No, he threw them in the basement. Yeah. They're gone. They're done.
Yeah.
Also, what I didn't realize was when I watched it was the pages somehow went from trapdoor to backdoor to puddle.
That's because...
And the door was closed.
That's because Mom was moving them down there.
There's stuff down there. There's skeletons.
Yeah.
There's Mom now.
There wasn't a skeleton before he threw the pages down.
How do you know? Could be Dr.
Because the skeleton was in his overalls. Spoilers.
Wait. I'm trying to... I've seen this film like 5 times.
Wait, did you stop recording?
Nope. Oh. I'm still...
She's just making
sense. I thought you
clicked. I'm trying to add a little tension to the recording session. Yes, Mara, your worst element?
Oh, my worst element was 100% the dialogue. Because every time someone opened their mouth, it was something else just stupid. And I was like, why? Like, at one point even, the professor's daughter is over by the book and she, like, starts the recording. Nobody's talking. Nothing's happening. Everyone's just kind of quietly sitting around waiting for what to do. And she goes, shh, everyone, listen. It's my father's voice. And I'm like, who are you shushing? Like, nobody's having a conversation.
The voice is in her head.
And he's got a lot going on.
100% dialogue was not a plus for me. It was the worst part of the film.
Yeah, that's mine too. Also, some of the ADR was pretty bad. I don't know if you guys caught that one part. It was in the very beginning. Ash, I think, is getting attacked by Linda's head. Oh, by the way, his girlfriend's name was Linda. And he's supposed to say work shed, or like, Ash
tool
gets...
Shed?
Oh, tool shed. Yeah, and they had to ADR that in over Bruce Campbell, and his mouth isn't moving. So that's kind of become an infamous part of the movie. And then that whole scene with when Ed's flying and, like, Henrietta's trying to climb out of the cellar, and they're all like, dead by dawn. One of the voices was just a woman voice, and I'm like, I'm a woman, so I don't find this scary. Some people might find this scary. I don't know.
That was one of my things. I don't know if you know anything about this, but what is it with laughing and demons in this movie? Because literally, like, I don't know if the demons are just having a great time or what's going on, but somehow demonic possession is always represented by laughter.
They just like being little stinkers.
Yeah, like at the beginning when, what's her name, Linda first turned, I wasn't sure what was happening, so I was like, she turns into a zombie clown? Because her laugh was just like a clown.
They're just little stinkers. They like having fun.
And then, like, yeah, like, you know, spoilers, Ash gets possessed and he's laughing along with a deer head on the wall and, like,
he wasn't
with the
possessed
light
then.
And everything. Yes, he was. Technically.
He was just crazy.
Oh.
He was a little crazy.
You know, I, yeah, I was watching all of this and I was just like, why are we laughing? You know, I was like, good for you guys. You're having a good time.
Yeah. Just a little fun. Yeah. We're just having
good
a little fun.
Good for you, Lamp. Having a good time.
That Lamp was, that one might be one of my favorite performances.
So yeah, I guess dialogue and laughter. My two worst elements.
Worst performance. Absolute worst performance.
We agree on this one. Knee-high socks girl.
Knee-high socks girl. Professor's daughter.
Oh,
knee-high
no.
socks girl.
I love Annie.
Awful. I was so sick of her.
See, I just love the character development between, because at one point she accidentally stabs Jake thinking that he is a demon without seeing him, and I just love the character progression of her being like, I'm sorry, and then 2 seconds later, shut up, shut up!
She's stressed, Emma.
I know, I just love that character progression from being horrified and being sad and scared to just all of a sudden, like, bam, I hate you.
I don't remember what it was, but when that happened, I remember we were like, why do you care? Like, she didn't like him. Like, they weren't getting along. He was making really stupid choices. And we're like, just kill him at that point. Like, why do you care? What was I going to say? Oh, the other worst performance I was going to say was, I don't know his name, but Annie's Ed. Boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Ed. Appropriate, because I nicknamed him Fred, because he looks exactly like Fred from Scooby-Doo.
Oh!
And, mm-hmm. He was one of my favorite demons in this movie. He looked super cool and was a very memorable demon.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
as a Who man,
mm-hmm.
he was so dumb.
Mm-hmm.
I did not enjoy him as the Who man's.
He was a bit part. Demon, no time is it. That's his song in the Evil Dead musical. Oh. Yeah, I don't really have one for absolute worst performance because I think everybody's kind of at the level that they need to be for this kind of movie.
Not Bobby Joe. She deserves an Oscar.
Oh, Bobby mm-hmm. Joe's great, though. Yeah, I do love Bobby Joe. I love Bobby Joe and Jake. I'll talk about them later. Like, watching it again, I've gained a greater appreciation for Jake. Most outrageous scene.
The claymation. The dancing. That came out of nowhere, and it was, like, the only bit of, like, that style of, like, claymation.
Like, for that length of time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when she goes into the forest,
yeah. They're like, we're running out of time to film this. What should she do? Just jump into the woods. We spent too much time and money on this dance sequence.
It was literally like, just get rid of her.
She's just doing a spooky little fun dance.
She also sat down for like 2 seconds on a branch and got up. I didn't know if that was part of the dance or if they changed her animation at the last minute, but
it was part of the dance.
Sure.
I'll say that. She was like, I'm gonna stop. Just kidding. Encore.
I'm back. Dance with me.
Well, that's what demons do. They're like, I'm done. Just kidding. I'm back.
For me, I think it had to be when, what was his name? I just kept calling him The Hick.
Jake. Good old reliable Jake.
I never caught on to his name, but he's like the epitome of a hick.
Mm-hmm.
Missing teeth, overalls, wife beater, all that good stuff. Chaw, even. But, when he got eaten by Henrietta and, like, the blood just kept on coming. I was like, and it wasn't even blood. You could tell it was red water.
I was like, The Shining?
Is yeah. this you? And it just, like, first you can hear him screaming while he's exploding blood everywhere. And I was like, okay, I think the insinuation here is the top half of him is gone. So I don't know what's screaming at this point. And then after that, after he goes down, there's this, like, entirely other tsunami of blood, and I was just like, that man had so much blood in his body. He, like, so much.
Henrietta could have been spitting some up, too.
That's true.
She could have gotten a little tummy ache.
That's true.
Or the house could have been spitting it up.
Ooh! It does do that.
The haunting, we're pulling the haunting back into this, because the house is alive in the haunting.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was something I want to talk about later. But, yeah, in that scene, they almost drowned that actor. And
I get it.
It's not a joke. This man almost died. And the fun fact, that actor did actually, like, that's how he got the job of being Jake, essentially, is because he had missing teeth, and he was like, oh, I don't know if you guys want to know this, but, like, I'm wearing some, like, fill-in teeth right now, and he took them out, and they were like, you're hired.
Poor guy. Aww.
My heart. my pick for most outrageous scene, I mean, I don't know, I guess I'm kind of, I was gonna, like, writing this down, I was like, I feel like I'm so desensitized to all this, like.
You're like, this is a perfectly normal Academy Award worthy movie. What are you talking about?
Yeah, everything is
outrageous.
Forrest Gump basically on par with Evil Dead 2.
I was like, I guess the laughing scene and every, because there's this kind of infamous at this point scene where everything in the cabin just starts laughing. Like, it starts out with a deer head, and then the lamp starts, and the other lamp starts, and the books.
And, like, the deer head made sense. It had a face. It could laugh. Nothing else had a face.
The gross thing about the deer was the way it first turned, and it was just like, yeah. Like breaking its bone.
Yeah, and how its face like kind of warped too, because it's a
I 100% could not see that.
And when we return, we'll be talking about some of our favorite aspects of the movie coming up on Cinema Cemetery. And we're back. He scared my cat. I guess a little behind the scenes information. Usually I record this from a closet. And
but today we're out of the closet.
Congratulations.
And today we're filming this in my kitchen, so there might be little smatterings of cats. My cat just got a little scared for our sound check right now. It's okay, Franny. But anyway, positives. What was your guys' favorite quote?
100% my favorite quote was, "Crazy bucks gone blood sick."
Blood sample! Yeah,
I was like, what?
Crazy bucks gone blood sample!
I was like, who says this? Where did this saying come from? I was like, where did these words come from, sir?
It's gone blood sample.
And then I also made a note that there's a lot of noise in this movie, but not a lot of dialogue. So the mm-hmm. question favorite quote was kind of a tough one to answer for me, because there's just not a lot of dialogue. That one really stood out to me because I was like, who the heck says this? But like, it's not a quiet movie mm-hmm. by any means. There's a lot of sound happening, just not like, not people talking to each other.
Because I did want to say, a lot of this movie, a lot of the slapstick and some of the situations were inspired by Three Stooges shorts.
I have a note about that in a minute. Well, I guess maybe I don't. I did make a note, though, that like Bruce Campbell's body movements really reminded me of like Dick Van Dyke and how his body is just rubber. Mm-hmm. And I have to say I was thoroughly impressed by that.
Yeah.
Because like, that's not easy. Like, literally, Buster Keaton mm-hmm. like spent so long perfecting like how to move like rubber so that when he did his slapstick jokes he wouldn't get hurt. Mm-hmm. So like that
it
was
helped too, the way they shot it, where they did like the faster frame rate for all those shots so that it looks like they're moving at like a weird sped up mm-hmm. level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your favorite quote, Tomas?
My favorite quote is by Bobby Joe.
Yeah.
And it's, "Sure ain't no road," and I only like that because the way she spits right after and she like catches a spit on her chin, it was like so not graceful. That was probably the best take they got of her spitting. She's just not a spitter.
All the other ones just like dribbled down her shirt, like for Mulan trying to.
She probably had like a wet patch on her shirt.
Had like wardrobe full of just white Bobby Joe shirts.
It was a one take affair. but yes, almost in my repeat viewings, almost everything Jake says is now my favorite. Just the "shoot, you go, you're the curious one," and "baby, I ain't holding your hand," and just how he, and then just the way that Jake shouts Bobby Joe, just "Bobby Joe, where are you, girl?"
Like, so we watched this with a third party.
Oh,
who is not here today? Lizzie, obviously. And Lizzie was like, "He needs to stop screaming." And I was like, "Lizzie's in distress." And like, my heart hurt for him, honestly, yeah. when he was screaming for her. I was like, "Aw." Like, I was wondering the whole time, why is someone so stinking cute like Bobby Joe with a redneck like that? But then I was like, "Aw, it's not creepy. He does like her."
Yeah.
I had a theory for Bobby Joe. I don't think she knew what kind of movie she was getting hired for. But she just, like, she stuck with it and gave it her all.
And good
She
on
did
her.
So good. But it was, like, I don't think she knew what she signed up for.
Yeah. I think that's fair. Best bad performance, in your guys' opinion?
Bobby Joe. Perfect segue. Because, like, she's, like, the unsung hero of the whole movie, I wrote down. Because she's, like, poor thing, she really is just, like, being messed with by all these ghosts. They knew that she was like a vulnerable little soul, and they just went after her.
Mm-hmm.
And so most of what she does is scream, but she did a great job.
Yeah.
And she caught an eyeball in her mouth.
Yeah, yeah. I have to give her props for that. That's yeah. why I put her down as the best bad performance too, just because she deserves an award.
Yeah.
She deserves something.
Yeah, she did great. And I really feel bad for her. She also had like one of the coolest deaths of mm-hmm. the movie, I felt like, and then I never got to see what ended up happening to her, which I was a little bummed about. I don't know if
I wonder
know.
If she was one of the faces in the tree.
I was gonna Ooh. Say that. I think she is, because they were going to have all the people who were taken by the evil be faces on the tree at the end. That's the evil spirit, by the way, at the end that they have to summon and then kill. It's a tree. A lot of faces on it.
In case you didn't get that.
In case you didn't get it. And in case you thought evil would be something else under the tree. It wouldn't be anything else. I put Ash and Jake here just because if they were in any other movie, it would be bad, but it's at the perfect level here. Like, they know what they're doing.
Fair enough.
They got it.
Also, real quick for Bobby Joe, mm-hmm. she had the cutest outfit of anyone in that.
She had a Canadian tuxedo, but she
Yeah, but
it.
When she took the Canadian tuxedo off, when she took the jacket off, and it was just a little shirt with jeans, Liz and I were sitting there looking at her, we're like, that outfit is really cute. We're like, those jeans fit her well, that shirt is just darling. We mm-hmm. were like, my God. And her makeup match, she had blue eyeshadow on and was killing it. She did a great job.
She really does got it going on.
I just needed to see her braces.
Yeah, Bobby Joe's great. I do think she is one of my favorite characters. I think just because it is such a small cast too, everybody's given a chance to shine. Best good performance.
I put the best good performance was the hand.
Mm-hmm.
Because like that little thing, I don't know. Just the way that it made the little sounds, I was like, man.
It had the most dialogue.
This hand deserves an award.
You're just yeah. gotta give it a hand.
Ew.
Oh man, I regret being here. mine had so I was torn. I mm-hmm. said Bruce Campbell / Ash because after watching this, I was like, okay, I see why he's a classic. I see why he's a cult classic, and everyone loves him. Like he does deserve props. However, I had to say that, like, the human Henrietta, not the one in, like, the prosthetic suit, which, by the way, I could see the seam up the back in one of the shots.
May I say something about that, too?
Yes.
So there was a part where it just completely bust open at the back, mm-hmm. and there's a scene when Henrietta's, like, flying around.
That was where I saw it. I was like, there's fully a butt flap right there.
You see, that's actually Sam Raimi's brother, Ted Raimi.
Oh, good for him.
You see his boxers, which, yeah.
Yes, I did.
Oh, I should have put Ted Raimi, because I gotta... go on. Sorry.
But, which, I mean, not to downplay that prosthetic. That was an awesome prosthetic, but mm-hmm. I did see butt.
Yeah, they didn't have the money to replace it.
But the human Henrietta. Mm-hmm. That was, like, the movie was enjoyable up until that part when she's singing, it wasn't Rock-a-Bye
Baby.
Hush, Little Baby, to her mm-hmm. daughter. That was terrifying. Genuinely, mm-hmm. that was really scary. Because she literally just looked like a sweet little old lady. Her clothes were fixed and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But, that was scary.
Yeah. I gotta say, Ted Raimi, just because they also talk in the commentary about how hot he was. Because there's a shot where you see Henrietta, which is the woman's name. You see her turn her head, and then all of a sudden this liquid drips out of her ear, and that's just Ted Raimi's sweat. And also the fact that with the those contacts, you can't see anything. So the fact that he was hot, he couldn't see anything, probably couldn't feel anything, but he's still rocking it.
He's getting spun around. He probably was sick to his stomach, too.
Yeah.
Sounds like me in the summer.
Yeah.
On the hot day.
when you lose your glasses.
Yeah.
But
being
like
spun around.
And Henrietta is also Annie's mother,
yeah,
too, which was why it was so creepy that she was singing the song.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'll leave it at that.
Because I was gonna say Annie, but knowing how you guys feel about Annie,
she's awful.
I did also put that I love Bobby Joe.
Yeah.
But I see. I like Annie because she's one of the smarter characters in this. Like, she doesn't get Like, she does get manipulated by the Deadite at first, but then she finds a way to manipulate the Deadite herself afterward when the evil Henrietta is going crazy, and then she starts singing the lullaby to the Deadite Henrietta. And the fact that she, like, when... Because there is a point where Ash turns into a Deadite, or gets possessed, and he depossesses himself, but she's still going after him with an axe. And I'm like, you go, girl! Like, she doesn't have... Like, she doesn't trust anybody, and I'm like, that's the way you gotta do it now. Like,
we did notice that. We were laughing about that, remember? That he's like, you can trust me! I just tried to kill you 2 seconds ago, but trust me!
You better know. It's fine. It's fine. It was a prank.
It's just a prank. It's a prank. Oh, there's cameras right there!
It did come out of nowhere, and I may try to eat your face again, but it's okay, I swear.
He did it with the love of his Linda. And when we return, we'll be talking about our overall favorite aspects of the movie on Penguin Radio. Woo! And we're back, and we're going to be talking about some of the best aspects of the movies, in our opinion. So what was your guys' choice for best aspect of the movie?
I'm just going to say my favorite part was when he turned his, like, missing hand into a chainsaw.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was so cool.
Yeah.
And I also thought that sequence was cool in itself, because it kind of reminded me of, like, a Casey Neistat video. How it was, like, super quick montage-y of him, like, doing something, like,
in
a
tool shop. I'm sure this was heavily influenced by Casey.
I'm sure it was. But I was like, oh my god, this is so, like, I don't know, it feels like kind of modern YouTube. Just that one shot.
Yeah, it was a fun shot, because I was wondering the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, like, the whole movie, because, like I said, I've like, walked in on you watching it. So I'm like, how does Ash go from Pooh-man to Chainsaw Headman?
With the cool Casey Neistat
and now I know. Still be a human. Disaboli over
well,
here.
Well, excuse me. I didn't mean that. I just meant chainsaw human.
Okay.
There we go. A cyborg-esque.
Well, that's Amen. Also problematic, because are you saying people with prosthetic parts are less human now? Are you saying that they're a different type of human?
I'm saying he's a better human.
Are you saying... No, that doesn't work. <really matter. laughs>
But I was wondering, I was like, what if he runs out of gas or something, or his little pull cord, like, falls off his little
Yeah, it was also thing. Like, why is he going down into the cellar without the chainsaw on yet? Like, why is he gonna, like, see her jump out and then... I'm like...
Wait a minute.
Don't attack me yet.
Wait just a second.
Hold on, it's flooded. Give me a minute.
You should have practiced beforehand.
Beforehand.
Oh, yuck.
Jinx.
Mara.
Mara.
Okay, so for me, I really appreciated the way that everything was shot. I don't have a film background, I don't know anything about film, but Tomas does, and he was telling me about, like, he was wondering if it was a certain kind
angles.
Of lens
Wide angle?
On a regular camera.
I thought it was like an anamorphic lens, with like a super wide aspect ratio squished into like a 35 or something.
Mm.
Because it really,
sure.
like,
mm-hmm.
the whole effect of
words.
That, the whole effect of that really, like, helped with the surreal feel of the whole movie, which was fun, so I enjoyed that. I thought things were shot well, and then, yeah, with, like, the whole chainsaw hand scene, I think if you had shot that any other way, it wouldn't have been, like, as engaging or interesting. It would have just come out hammy, but this way it was, like, it was a fun hammy.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It was campy, not hammy. But, and then the other thing I really liked, which is just from, you know, a visual literacy background, I really liked the set design of the whole movie, I have to say. Because, like, I was noticing there's really not much in the way of set design.
Mm-hmm.
Like, things are really minimally decorated, painted. There's not tons to set a scene there, but there's enough. And everything that is there really, like, does its job in creating a space and a time.
Mm-hmm.
you know? So everything felt really intentional that mm-hmm. was there without overdoing it, mm-hmm. which I really liked. Which, you know, when you were saying that there are similarities between this and The Haunting, mm-hmm. I kind of get that with the set design. Because same thing in The Haunting where, like, you know, everything there is intentional. Like, The Haunting does kind of feel like they walked into an open house and, like, filmed it there. Like, mm-hmm. everything that's there has a cohesive place and time. And I got that from this, too. So, yeah, those were my favorite elements.
Yeah, it was, like, the floor plan of this cabin was, like, super well designed for this because of that, like, 1 to 2 minute shot where he's, like, being chased by this, like, demon, mm-hmm. which is just, like, the handheld camera. And he runs throughout the house from room to room, door to door, and everything kind of leads into itself mm-hmm. until he gets, like, back into that main room with the cellar and the chair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I did want to talk about, because I think the visuals are what I do really love about this movie, and what you touched on, too, something that I noticed is that everything is very basic. It's a lot of dark-colored backgrounds, and then the characters in the foreground, the Deadites especially, have all these details with their makeup, and they're very bright just because of the whole aspect of being pale, and the fact that a lot of the characters wear primary colors, and it is a lot of primary colors, and it's just a very basic and easy to understand look.
I mean, it makes sense that it was turned into a stage production, because it's a very, like, stage production-y way of doing costumes and everything, where, like, the characters are what stands out, not mm-hmm. everything around them. And it's also good because you know that you're watching a horror movie. You know this is all gonna get destroyed in 5 minutes, so you don't have to worry about continuity errors between shots of, like, hey, wait, that moved, or, like, fell over or something. Like, so, you know, it's effective. It was clever and effective.
And,
you know,
too, with, like, the costumes and stuff, it's like, kind of classic horror where it's just, like, or, like, 80s horror stuff where it's, like, you're not really keeping track of characters' names. You're more like, oh my god, knee-high socks girl, what's she doing? Or, like, so-and-so with the, like, blue. Like, mm-hmm. it helps you keep track of characters without having to really, like, keep track of them.
Mm-hmm. The scene right after he cuts his hand off, he's getting some duct tape, and my favorite shot is just, it's like Ash in a profile, like with the duct tape in his mouth, pulling the whole wheel.
That was very Jim Carrey. Yeah.
I like that shot composition though, and the way that the camera just like slowly like moved up a little bit. I was like, this really talks to just how good visually Sam Raimi is in, like, how the camera is always moving, how it's always doing something.
Well, that was why I liked the cinematography, mm-hmm. as you call it. It really emphasized everything that was happening. It never took away from it or made it too, like, gimmicky. It, like, yeah, it emphasized everything, which in a very obviously low-budget film like this, it can very easily go two ways. You know, it can either go classic or, oh my god, what just happened? And I think the cinematography took it in, like, a classic route because it was shot very, very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, to me, it's like, it wasn't like the camera work was just good. It was like the camera was another character of the movie, mm-hmm. where it's like, it turns the viewer into the demon. It turns the viewer into just, like, a spectator being chased as well. And it's, like, that's what made the cinematography even better. They just, like, they didn't really hold back on the camera work. And it really added to it.
Yes, it feels very inspired by The Haunting because a lot of The Haunting is what you don't see. Yeah. And the whole idea of that, like, you can hear these things and that your mind is going to make these things much scarier than anything the director can show you, because Sam Raimi's spoken about that, and they were talking about that.
That's what I love about The Haunting, honestly. I was explaining Shirley Jackson to Tomas and to Lizzie a while ago, and I was saying, like, how, just like how Alfred Hitchcock is the master of suspense, because he, like, builds the tension and drops it, and builds the tension and drops it, Shirley Jackson, I would consider her the mistress of suspense, because she just builds it the whole time. And I think the movie did a good job of doing that, because you've got such an unreliable narrator, which I got that vibe from Ash too. Mm-hmm. It's an extremely unreliable narrator who's slowly going insane, and the camera work really emphasizes how it's like in her head. It's mm-hmm. She's slowly going insane and descending, and the camera work takes you inside her mind, and it doesn't do it in like a in like a comedy-esque way where she's just like walking around staring at the wall in weird ways. Like the camera work makes it look like the walls are moving and things like that, and it's, you know, spinning and it's confusing you too. And I got that with Ash too, because I noticed, so he fell and hit his head several times early on in the movie before anything like too demonic had happened yet. So it did remind me of The Haunting in that sense, because I'm like, every time things start going crazy, every time like more and more demons start coming out, Ash starts holding his head. And I was like, It makes him an unreliable narrator in that sense, because, like, obviously things are happening. There are three other people there who are also experiencing these things. But it was kind of like, how much of it is real? How much of it is happening? Like, especially in that scene with everything laughing along with him. It's like, how much of that is demonic possession? How much of that is Ash has hit his head several times and is still running around and panicking and not seeking medical attention and slowly going insane.
And the three other characters end up dying too.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of like, were they ever there to start with? Because their storylines are pretty separate up until, I'd say maybe even like a little over halfway through the movie, pretty close to the end, all of a sudden everyone's storyline comes together. So at that point, Ash is like completely bonkers. And it really makes you kind of think, how much of this is happening, you know, which, you know, again, that's what I love about The Haunting, is that nothing actually happens in that movie. It's all just your unreliable narrator slowly going insane and making you question too what's actually going on. And it's the same thing with Evil Dead, where you're like, this unreliable narrator, like, is slowly going insane. I feel like I've kind of lost it by the end of the movie too, you know, which, I mean, obviously, like, the Evil Dead franchise goes on after this. We know that a lot of this has really happened. But if you're looking at this movie as a standalone, you know.
Well, and especially with the third movie, because it does start out with Ash telling the story of what of this happening. I guess it kind of confirms that happened at the end. And that stuff that, So, yeah, overall, would you guys recommend this movie?
I would. Yeah. If someone's into, like, 80s style horror movies that are just like a fun time, I would.
It was a campy good time.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't put it above like Friday the 13th and stuff on my Halloween watch list, but I would definitely still recommend it.
I guess we can go into a little of Evil Dead 2 trivia. I couldn't think of a good pun for this one. Oops.
I did it again.
So there's just two of us right now.
I don't know why I invited her. Speaking of Friday the 13th, it was with Nightmare on Elm Street.
You've also seen that?
Because there is a
scene. He lives on Elm Street.
I do live on Elm Street. It's a nightmare.
But there's a scene in the first Nightmare on Elm Street
where he had Freddy's glove in the tool shed above the door. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see it.
That's adorable.
That's cool.
That's like a Twitter war before Twitter. Very passive aggressive.
But I'd like to say thank you all for listening to Cinema Cemetery. Thank you, Mara and Tomas, for being on tonight.
It was a pleasure.
Anytime.
Anytime, but we're not watching Evil Dead again.
Intro and outro themes were created by Ditto Master. You can find his work on YouTube and Spotify. And we have an Instagram. It's cinema.cemetery on Instagram. Right now we're having a little bit of technical difficulties, but I'm getting those sorted out. And if you ever feel the urge to return to this holy ground, you can always find us here at Penguin Radio. A goodbye!